Today, we're talking with Dawn Landry. Dawn is a best-selling author, B2B growth specialist, and certified Clifton's coach. She helps leaders advance their business development efforts through better management and team cohesiveness. I'm your host, Zachary Alexander. Please don't forget to hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcast so that you won't miss any new episodes. Many people say that 2020 was shaping up to be their best year ever. However, COVID changed their plans, and far too many are left wondering what to do next. So we're talking with an expert about why we should start any building or recovery effort playing to our strengths. Dawn, welcome to the Subscription Maker Podcast.
Thank you, Zachary. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you started your career doing PR and crisis management, correct?
That is correct. That's what my degree is in public relations.
So how does that help you with what you're doing today?
Now, as I reflect back on my career, one of the first jobs that I had out of college, I was working for an ad agency, and we were on a crisis management team specific to oil spills in the Gulf of Mexico. And that, you think, how in the world does that help you with BD in 2021, right? I actually think that our careers, especially our early careers, are this mosaic of experiences that we have that actually kind of get us to where we are overall. And so what that experience taught me is if there's an oil spill, we're not going to go and know exactly what to do unless we've had that early preparation. We used to drill and actually, you know, we'd have our beepers because this was 1993. And so we'd have our beepers on, and it didn't matter if it was 10 o'clock at night or, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday, your beeper would go off and you had to go to a muster point. Oftentimes it was in Baytown, Texas, and be able to prepare yourself for that drill. So the correlation that I have in terms of having that crisis management background and training is that early preparation, that drilling that you have. So then that way, you know how to prepare when things like what happened last year occur. And so what it means specific to business development is that are your relationships tested? Are your relationships ready from a BD standpoint to be able to be that stress tested for those crises?
Could you give us a couple tips on what we should consider as we rebuild and recover?
So the easiest thing to do is not to try to predict too far out. I think sometimes, look, even before the pandemic, things were changing. Technology was happening. Innovation was happening so quickly. And when people wanted to prepare for like 7, 10, 15 year plans, I'm like, the markets are changing so fast. The reality was you could only really do a 3 to 5 year plan that would have any real effect. As we walk out of the pandemic, the thing that I've been advising companies is don't try to think too far out. Create like a 3, 6, 9 month action plan, create some measurable outcomes specific to it. And then and only then will you be able to see any great results. Let's get to the end of 21. Then we can figure out what our 3 to 5 year plan is at the end of that.
Yeah, I guess that leads to something I read once about companies being at most risk in the near term, mm-hmm. and that 18 to 36 month time frame. That, you know, everything before that 18 months, everything before the 18 months, you know, 6 months to a year, you've already invested in that. You know, you've already you know, played your cards and everything's in motion. But what matters is, what do you got coming up? Mm-hmm. You know, if that 6 to 12 month time period changes, what can you invest, add a little more money to, and bring something online in a hurry?
Absolutely.
Now, we know that you are a certified Clifton Strength Coach and a B2B growth specialist. Would you tell us a little more about your business, Authenticity?
So thank you for asking that question. So my background, I've spent the last 28 years in business development in one way, shape, or form, either in marketing roles or in true business development roles in the B2B space. And oftentimes it was in commercial general construction with the last full-time in-house job that I had was with an international publicly traded commercial general contractor out of London. And so when I started Authenticity, I actually said, well, I'm going to do what I know to do. And that's advise companies from a business development standpoint, do outreach for them, and then also do training specific to that in terms of teaching people how to fish. And because oftentimes working with those true technical doer sellers that often are in the architect, engineering, construction space, a lot of times they aren't as comfortable with that business development functionality that is a part of their job. So I love to train people in that regard. So when I started Authenticity, that's really what the business was all about. One thing that I identified very quickly is that, and I had a front row seat to it at a couple of the jobs that I had, is that if the vision, if the leadership team is not in alignment with one another and they don't appreciate one another for the diversity of thought and experience that each person brings to the table, then selling a bunch of work is not going to help you whatsoever. And so really you have to have that as a foundation. And so that's when I became Clifton Strengths certified, is that layering on that functionality piece of it, getting the leadership team in alignment with one another and setting the course both internally and externally, and then actually doing business development. So it's an add-on to that functionality that Authenticity provides to this day.
Yeah, I've always been a huge fan of Clifton Strengths because of the ability to know who you're talking to.
Absolutely.
You know, if you know what their top five is, you kind of get an understanding. Now, it may not line up, but you got at least a starting point mm-hmm. of how to talk to people. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've seen it. I became familiar with the tool in 2012, and we successfully utilized it, at least in our local office, extremely well with the four officers. It became part of our correspondence, our communication that we actually had with one another. And so oftentimes, knowing my Clifton strength and knowing you have that familiarity with the terminology, I'll just kind of give you an example. So ideation is one of my top five. And so ideas are like popcorn for me. They just kind of spur it out. It's a fantastic attribute to have if I'm brainstorming. It's quite annoying if we already know kind of the general ideas of the concepts. I can make the meeting last a long time. And so that having that as a tool, my colleagues would say, Dawn, please don't bring your ideation to this meeting. We have it's going to delay the process. We got to keep on going. And so we actually used it as a secondhand tool for one another. And it works extremely well in that way.
Okay, let's shift gears a little bit. What is Coronet Houston?
So Coronet stands for Corporate Real Estate Network, and it's a global organization. And so it's specific to the real estate industry, and it's a professional organization. And I've been involved in that organization many times. I spent a lot of time on the board of that organization. I'm no longer on the board, but I spent a lot of time on the board of that organization. I was president-elect for 2 years, president for 3 years, past president for a year. So it's a great organization that supports that functionality of corporate real estate.
Okay. Dawn, let's talk about something really difficult. What does aphasia mean to you?
So aphasia is an inability to speak, and it's a derivative of having a stroke. And so, and oftentimes, if you are able to speak, you can't, the wiring between your brain and your mouth and your brain and your hand doesn't work. And so words come out differently, or they don't come out at all. And so what it means to me in the walk that we've had is that my husband at 48 years old had a stroke in November of 2019 and was left 100% paralyzed on his right side and with an inability to speak. And so the aphasia hit him really. It was very, very challenging from that point of view. And I had to speak for him for several months. And so it actually taught me to be a better communicator. And so oftentimes I've said that my professional career, the crisis management things that I learned along the way helped me from a personal standpoint, because he's also a stage 4 cancer survivor. And so having those crisis management skills helped us personally, but actually the personal health battles that he's gone through and what I've had to adapt to be able to get through it has helped me from a professional standpoint. And I'll give you an example. And so I'm a better listener because of having walked through the aphasia with him, because I've witnessed how other people communicate with him. Oftentimes, you know, they are domineering, and so they try to talk for him. They don't let him get to the words. My husband has always been in there. He has always known what he wanted to say. It's just, like I said, the wires are messed up. And so they either talk to him or they talk at him, or they talk to him like he's a 4-year-old child, which he is not, which is very condescending. And then the third group of people that I actually just marvel at is that they are super relaxed. They throttle back and they're like, dude, I'm here. Get to the words. And so it's taught me, you know, I've always strived to be a better listener, but it's really taught me to be really a lot more patient in terms of my listening abilities.
So what is a care coach?
So, like I said, lots of health issues with my husband. And so, the term caregiver never resonated with me. And so I created a term that actually is a better fit for me as we've walked through his health issues. And so the care coach, you know, kind of name, encompasses a lot of the caregiver, you know, things that you do. So whether it's the loving piece of it, the caring piece of it, and all the other things. But rather than being, you know, letting things happen to you, the care coach is really proactive and this ambassador and advocate on behalf of making things happen on behalf of their loved one that is in this health trauma that they're in. It's also about leveraging their strengths, whether it's their Clifton strengths or just knowing. Unfortunately, I know my Clifton strengths and I knew my husband's Clifton strengths before his stroke. And so I was able to coach him based upon his Clifton strengths as well. And, you know, Zachary, I listened to your podcast with Jim Collison from Gallup. And one thing that you said is that you have activator. My husband has activator also. So he's the spark and he has achiever. And so he's not only the spark, but he's actually the fuel to get it done. And so it's being able to really kind of leverage that about him. And so he wakes up every day with a purpose, even, you know, in all of his recovery. Could mean that he could only do a fraction of what he was able to do, but he always had something on his to-do list to get him up in the morning and a reason and a purpose for living. And he's an inspiration to me.
I guess one of the things I also thought when I heard you discussing it on an interview was that you were coaching other people who interacted with him. You were letting them know, you were giving them hints. Here's how you talk to him. You know, here are the things that will motivate him.
Yes.
And when I think of care coach, that's what I think of, is someone who's, you know, more than an advocate, but also a coach, someone who's helping other people attain a level of skill so that they can interact with your husband.
Thank you for clarifying that. You're absolutely right, Zachary. So I printed out his top 5. And I would use it with his therapist to be able to talk. So his number one is focus. His number two is context. He has to look back to look forward. So being able to see those milestones, I put up blank sheets of paper on his walls to be able to record the milestones for the day. And then at the end of the week, we'd go back and look at for how far he'd come in even a week's time. And so, and then being able to use that with the therapist to be able to say, this is how to get him, you know, this is how to motivate him.
Now, during this period, you also wrote a book called Armored. What was that process like?
So like I said, my husband had a stroke at the end of November of 2019. He spent the entire month of December in the hospital and in patient rehab. So we spit out the other side that January. So by March, my business was going to come back. I was going to have this amazing March of 2020. And then needle across the record, COVID hit, right? And so I had nothing but space and time. And I had this desire for 20 years to write a book. And so I felt this calling, you know, for me, I have a strong faith. And so for me, it was just calling to be able to help other people with their journeys. Because I learned a little bit from each health battle that he had gone through. And I really felt like I needed to share it. So, you know, I had in my contacts, and I'm a great networker, and as are you. And I had accumulated the contact information for this woman who's a book coach. And so I took a seminar last April, 30,000 words poured out of me in 3 weeks. And I call it she, because the book has her own persona now. So Armored would wake me up at 2 o'clock in the morning to write her. And so it's been an amazing journey. And so it's been a fun process to really stretch myself in a new way also.
Now, sailors call their ships she. Why do you call your book she?
Because it's a reflection of me. There's a lot of our personal story in there. So Armored is a memoir with inspirational and practical life strategies, but it's a flow. Again, you kind of have to hear my story, our story in terms of kind of how we got together to be able to understand the relationship. And so, so it's a reflection of me. And I think that's why I call her she.
Now, Dawn, did you have to pivot your business during 2020?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I, like I said, nothing but time and space. The book was one part of the pivot, but the other part of the pivot was really transitioning to this virtual world and really, you know, going from, you know, day-long team building retreats to chopping them up and doing virtual retreats and whatnot. And it has been, I've loved the process. I actually think that smaller bite-sized nuggets of team building retreats are better for your clients because you leave them with something, especially for those people that are high strategic thinkers that have a lot of intellection that need to go away, let it soak, come back. And so it was this building process. So yeah, that was another part of the pivot that I had from last year.
So I want to dig a little deeper on that process. Who did you talk to when you were thinking about the pivot?
I was talking to my clients. I was flexing to their needs. I'll never forget a conversation that I had with a previous client. We did a 3-day team building retreat in the middle of 2019. And we had always had the ambition to come back and pick up the next levels in architecture firm, pick up the next level of folks. And so we were talking and she said, you know, the culture isn't what we've invested so much money in our culture. I don't want to let that go from us not being around each other. And she's really respectful of their company culture. So she said, can we figure this out? She's like, we're not doing luncheons. We're not doing happy hours. I'm not, you know, sending my people to conferences. I don't have a lot of money, but I have a little pool of money. And so she was willing to just kind of let us play and figure it out. And the same thing with another client. So really it was, who was I talking with? I was talking to my clients to figure out and adapt to what they were willing to be able to try also.
So what was the best advice you received?
The best advice is just, you know, you can't fail at this point, right? And so, I mean, rather than doing nothing, it's anything is better than nothing, right?
Okay. So not everyone has gone through what you've gone through. However, a lot of people have suffered a loss of some type over the past year. Would you talk about how you should use your Clifton strengths to keep going in these difficult times?
So, you know, when you use it in a group with your peers, it's a communication tool. when you explore it even further with yourself and you catch yourself, and Gallup uses the term name, aim, and claim, or name, claim, and aim, but you catch yourself doing something specific to your strengths and you tell your family, hey, these are my strengths. Be a strength scout and catch me doing this really well. And so if you can, in the good times, sharpen that tool and really hone it and identify it for yourself. When you go through a difficult time and you need motivation, you can look at your strengths and get that motivation. And it's not only how the strengths go and how you use them with other people, you can turn them back towards yourself. And so let me give you an example. So I don't have anything that even smells like any, you know, the four domains are relationship building, executing, strategic thinking, and influencing. I don't have anything that even smells like the purple, the executing, until number 12. And so people like, how do you get anything done? And for me, it's command is my number 6. And then competition is my number 2. I actually create like an internal game with myself, and I command myself to get stuff done. And then I make it a competition with myself to be able to do it. I know myself well enough during that time, or during these times, to be able to do that. That's the advice that I give to other people, is turn your strengths back toward yourself and motivate yourself in that way.
That kind of gets to a point that I like to ask people. Everybody knows that Clayton Christensen wrote the book Innovator's Dilemma. However, many people don't know he also wrote a book called Competing Against Luck. In this book, he talks about the fact that so many people think that when someone's successful, the only reason they're successful is because they're lucky. He also wrote in this book, and the reason I'm getting to it is because the biggest competitor that you have in business is often your customer doing nothing. Inertia. There's always a potential that inertia will slow things down. So Don, I know that you have competitive as one of your top strengths. So how do you deal with inertia? How do you deal with inertia in your clients is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. So I it's a great question. And I had to ponder it a little bit also, you know, Zachary. And really, it's creating programs. So, you know, we could be frozen in time. You know, last 2020, we could use it all as an excuse to be frozen in time. And the thing that I kept telling my clients is create some kind of program that has intentionality and accountability and try to get something going overall. And so if you can create ownership by the people that need to, so if it's a business development function, for instance, and you divide and conquer your client list, making sure that there's measurable, achievable outcomes, and then having ownership specific to the people that need to own those client accounts, and then creating a program that has intentionality and accountability so you make sure that you're having those touch points with those people along the way.
Okay. So we've talked about inertia and getting people going. What I want to talk about next is how do you find those small successes to celebrate, you know, when that's all you got?
Mm-hmm. it's so interesting because I was having this conversation with a client friend of mine last week, and she was in she was in a slump. Right? One loss after another in terms of the opportunities aren't out there right now. And she had some opportunities up to bat, and she was in this slump. And I just had to advise her, look, it's only going to last for, all you need is one win, and then it's going to turn it around, right? So just dig in there and keep it going. And then what are you finding out in the losses? What lessons learned from the debriefs can you glean to be able to tap into it? And then even going back to your previous wins, so many people get a debrief after a loss. I like to get a debrief after a win because I find out more from the wins than I do almost from the losses. And then identifying what are those common trends, and then and only then can you try to find a repeatable path. And then going back to your question, the little things actually amass cumulatively to the big thing. So it may not be a huge project that you won right now, but where is it going to lead? How are you developing the relationship to ultimately for it to lead to a bigger project later down the road?
Does it have legs?
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we start to wrap up, Dawn, is there a question that you wish more people would ask you?
This is a tough question, right? And so I think that one of the things that I wish people would ask me most is, what value do you bring? What value do you bring to your clients? And the thing that I love to do is to get them to see business development in a different light. So I work with lots of really technical doer seller kind of folks who have put almost a stigma to the word business development. They don't like the word sales, right? And so I'm like, call it what you want to call it. Call it fun time with friends. But, you know, it's kind of what Dan Pink says. I love Dan Pink. Dan Pink says in his book, To Sell as Human, all it is persuading a person to make a decision in your favor. And so if you convince somebody to marry you, that's sales. If you convince your kid to eat his peas for dinner last night, that's sales. And so it's owning that place in your company and specifically what that role is. And that's the value that I bring in terms of breaking the business development process down and creating a process individual to that person. So then that way they can be successful.
So how do you teach success, or how do you teach respect for entrepreneurship and the next generation?
It's mentorship. And it's mentorship because we should all be accountable to mentorship. I'm sitting here today because other people have invested time and energy and effort in me. And so we have to pay it back. And there's also a stigma specific to entrepreneurship. You know, past the 4-year mark in my company, but prior to, I never wanted to own a company. And I have some fantastic people who shook their pom-poms and said, "Dawn, you can do this." And they broke down what it means to be an entrepreneur and made it a lot less scary for me. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to invest in the future generation to do that as well.
Now, do you have anything that you feel comfortable, anything new, anything coming up that you would feel comfortable talking to us about?
Yes, I love that question. So now that I've proven to myself that I can write a book on caregiving, which like I said, I'm the most unintentional caregiver you could, care coach that you could ever hope for. Now that I've done that, I am writing about something that I know, which is business development. And so I'm working on that book right now, and I have ambitions to release it later this year.
What's the best way to follow you on social media?
Dawn Landry on LinkedIn is the best way. I am super active, have been for years on that social media channel. And then also my website is www.authenticitywithaz.com.
Dawn, thank you for joining us on the Subscription Maker podcast.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Zachary.
This is your host, Zachary Alexander, subscription service designer at subscriptionmaker.net. Please join us next time as we talk about what it takes to be a successful subscription maker. And that's a wrap.